Dr. Austin Byrne, GP at Tramore Medical Clinic, is on the line for his usual slot. Austin, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And mercifully have avoided getting the flu, because that's something you're going to talk about as well as answering questions. Now, loads of people, like, can you just explain to me about the flu vaccine? Because I thought that, you know, health service people identified which strain of flu was likely to be the one that got us. And that's the strain of flu that we got the vaccine for. Is that the case this year? Because I'm hearing that it's not, that we didn't get that one. Is that misinformation?
Yeah, and there's a bit of it. There's a bit of a furore. And, you know, it's a we love a post-mortem in this country. And it's a good thing to look back. And always say, well, why is this happening? Could we have done it better? You know, on this one. So the flu vaccine that we give. So first of all, we have two different types of vaccine. We have the adult vaccine for over 18s, which is an injectable, what we call a trivalent flu vaccine. And that has three flu components in it. And then we have a separate vaccine for the kids, which is still available and recommended for people aged 2 to 18. And that's given as a nasal delivery. So it's a non-injectable. On the kids in particular, the uptake this year has been shocking low. So I'm going to start with just a reminder to everyone, if you haven't had the kids vaccinated, there is still time to get it done and build immunity in advance of the Christmas. So please do consider it. It's extremely well tolerated. It's quite effective. Unfortunately, the effectiveness this year of our overall vaccines is not as good as previously. And that's where a lot of this controversy or questioning has arisen from. So where we're at, the WHO have a committee every year that looks at surveillance, at patterns of flu transmission in the Eastern Hemisphere. And they look at the Australian pattern and the evolving pattern in Asia. And they pick the most likely subtypes of flu to appear. And this is just like we see with COVID. Suddenly you're in one subtype and you migrate across to another subtype. And as they change, the vaccines can become more or less effective. And so the three types were picked as a Victoria, Croatia and an Austria subtype were picked, put into the flu shot. And what do you know? The flu has since gone on to migrate a little bit further across. It's done what it calls a shift across to a slightly different type. And so the vaccine stock we have isn't quite as effective as it might have been in previous years. That's a luck of the draw type scenario, and the process of selection is done on best evidence, most likely prevalent types to transmit, and so the correct type was included at the time, and it is still worth getting it, because for any of us who get vaccinated, we'll lower our chances of severe flu quite significantly. And we lower our chances of, for example, having a prolonged bed stay, prolonged high fever in the case of children. And we lower our chances of secondary complications, such as the severe sore throats and the pneumonias and the hospitalizations that we see. But unfortunately, the match this year isn't quite as good as previous years. Now, there's been some debate, you know, could we have had a stronger vaccine? There's been talk of a stronger vaccine type, and there is a slightly different vaccine available for adults that has more of what's called an adjuvant, and that's an added component to try and stimulate your immune system. So for a given shot, your immune system will respond a little bit more strongly. And that is a little better, for sure. But it's not a little better in the regard that it would still be matching the three types that we have. So it's this change in flu strain, this shift in strain is the main problem. And it's interesting to hear a lot of the conversation. I'm hearing from patients from time to time, oh, they gave us the weaker vaccine. If we'd had the stronger vaccine, we'd have been much better off. We'd have been 20% better off if we'd had a matched flu strain. The bigger issue for us isn't the 20%. The bigger issue is that actually as a population, we haven't enough people actually getting the vaccine.
Yeah.
And until we have population delivery in the region of, you know, the high 80s, 90%, there's an argument to be made that really you're far better off to get people on board and give the vaccine than to bring in a inverted commas, a stronger version. Because you know what? One of the hazards here with bringing in a vaccine with extra adjuvants, and we see this on the ground, immediately people start to say, oh, God, there's a bit more stuff in that this year. I don't know if I want to get that one. So I think it's been a little bit overplayed in the media of recent days, the questioning. The issue here is a shift rather than a fundamental flaw in the vaccine selection, which is following the WHO guidance. So I'd be back in the HSE on this one.
And is the shift... Is the the virus doing the shift to counteract the vaccines? Like, you know, the way that some antibiotics, they've, you know, the strains have become resistant to the antibiotics. Is this just a random thing, or is this a virus reacting to the fact that there's more vaccines out there? Do you know?
Yeah, so if virus takes hold, it's a kind of a natural selection thing in a way. So whichever virus subtype happens to transmit more avidly, happens to transmit better at a given type, will achieve, if you like, population success, will manage to it doesn't transmit itself. It gets transmitted by chance. And we look in and we kind of nominate it as if it is a sentient thing, you know, that it's thinking about where it's going to go. But it's a game of odds. And if there are several types circulating and one has an advantage that it transmits easier and gets on to the next person quicker, it will start to win over because more people get it and more people transmit it on.
Okay.
And if you deploy vaccination early, you can stop that surge. If your vaccine trickles out too slowly, it can worsen the process slightly. It can increase your chances of drift sideways. But this, to be honest with you, this is one of those things. The last time we had it like this was about 2010. I remember it well, being in Caradoc, and it was just overwhelmed Stephen's day. It's an inevitable but unpredictable event that we see every 10 to 15 years.
But if it's so important, because we're hearing hospitals are under pressure, don't go to emergency departments, all of that. If it's so important, why doesn't everybody get it for free then?
So there are very few people who won't qualify for the flu vaccine at the minute on a free access basis. It's hard to find them. So the barrier here isn't funding, for example. It isn't people paying for flu vaccine because if you're not in one of the at-risk groups, essentially most people on a regular medication will qualify without getting into the details. But if you have an illness that you take tablets for, you'll qualify. If you are a close contact or frequently in contact with someone who has an illness or is at risk, you will qualify. If you are a child or an adolescent, you will qualify. If you're a carer, you will qualify. You know, it's hard to find someone who won't. So there's no issue in terms of getting vaccine to people. I think we've a bit of vaccine fatigue in general, you know. Yeah, and understandably so. I think there's very little point looking back now. If you'd asked me 2 months ago, you know, what do we need to do for flu this year? The answer would have been get as many people vaccinated as possible. But there wouldn't be a sense of, oh, God, we're in bother this year, because we aren't to know.
Yeah.
We can only ever do our best at the time. We do know today that we are surging significantly and we would be better off individually getting vaccinated. So we just act with the info we have and we do our best to deploy.
Everybody will be all mixing with other people around Christmas and everything. It's a perfect storm for...
this is the problem. Yeah. So... we'll generally go into Christmas with some flu circulating, and as we socially gather, that flu gets passed around. This year, we're going into Christmas with 5 to 6 times the amount, 500-600% the usual amount of circulating flu. And so when we're in the room, the odds of someone else with flu being there are really, really, really high. Yeah, okay. that's the amplification event. You know, that's gonna push it on. The fundamental problem here, if we were to start waving fingers and given out to people, is that we don't have enough beds in the country. We're 5,000 beds short nationally. You know, this surge is predicted to take no less than 1,000 extra beds at any one time. So that's two large hospitals. We don't have any surge capacity in the country. And these events are... They're predictably unpredictable. We know we will have a significant surge every 10 to 15 years. We know we've had a pandemic. We will have another pandemic. You know, thankfully, we haven't seen the emergence of bird flu this year, last year. We've seen it in wild bird populations and seal populations and some captive mammal populations. And it's only a matter of time before we do see another pandemic emerge. With significant fallout. So we need to start building in redundancy, extra capacity into our hospital infrastructure. We are way behind. We right now have fewer beds than we had when we had 1.5 million fewer people in the country.
Somebody wants to know, what about under 2 years old?
So under two, case by case. So there are some of the kids are high risk and are to be vaccinated. Some of them aren't. So if in doubt, it's case by case, really. So discuss with your GP clinic locally and we'll advise accordingly.
Okay, a question for you. The caller is worried about a scalding, burning pain from the outside of his leg, from the knee down to the ankle. He was worried it might be a clot, but his doctor said it's not and gave him Xprim. He wonders if, Austin, you have any idea what it might be.
So a scaldy, burning pain, it sounds like a nerve entrapment type pain. And there's a couple of the little, there's one of the little surface nerves in particular on the outer surface of the shin there can get bruised and knocked sometimes just below your knee. It winds around the head of the main bone there, the fibula. That could well be that. So a nerve like this that's firing off inappropriately, plain paracetamol is first line. And then if that's not working, the likes of Xprim added in is appropriate to use here. Sometimes there are other options, and you'll hear about nerve numbing drugs and things like, you know, pregabalin, amitriptyline. They tend to be best avoided unless they're essential, because they can carry sedation and other effects. This sounds like appropriate treatment here. I don't think there's a lot else to do at this point. It's really a case of wait and see, and give the nerve a few weeks to see will it quieten down.
Somebody wants to know about the best treatment you can get for migraines.
The best treatment for migraines, there's a kind of no best. And for people who are experienced migraineurs, as we call them, people learn to recognize their triggers. And there's often a seasonal component. People will often say coming into the autumn, the low light coming in the window or light, you know, catching them low in the face will be enough to trigger it. Other people will have food triggers. And so avoiding those triggers is very effective for some people. For those who then to start to experience migraine, one of the best approaches, to be honest, is to get a combination of medication in early on in the event to try and terminate it. And again, it's quite case by case, but in summary, what we'll often do for people is combine an anti-nausea drug with paracetamol and a soluble agent such as good old-fashioned aspirin, and sometimes indeed a third agent in alongside that. So you're taking a cocktail of 3 to 4 drugs immediately at onset of the event. That can be very effective. And soluble aspirin itself, head to head, is as effective as a lot of these newer agents, what we call the Z drugs or the triptan drugs. And triptans are a migraine tablet that most migraineurs will be familiar with. And they're a non-painkiller that's used to try and terminate the event, and they can be used alongside other tablets. So for people who are getting a lot of migraine or severe migraine, it'll often be a sort of a multiple agent cocktail to be used early on in the event. If, however, you're someone who's having, you know, reasonable frequency of events and you're getting debilitated by them, we then start to use preventer medication. And again, there's a sort of a sequential ladder that we ramp up to and including other similar to nerve blocking agents that we'd use for the neuralgia that I mentioned earlier on. So there's a whole raft, and the short answer to a long question is there is no single agent, but avoiding triggers is key. Keeping a headache diary to try and pinpoint triggers and understand what exactly is going on, making sure blood pressure triggers, for example, blood pressure swings aren't triggering it, and then having a well-planned resource of options to use at onset of events, and obviously layering that then with preventive treatments as needed. Most migraines, thankfully, can be prevented with an adequate preventer regime coupled with lifestyle changes. So for a lot of people who have migraine that becomes established, it's a thing that they'll run through a pattern of recurring migraine, and then we get it under control and get things settled back down again. But it's a multi-step process on that one.
Okay, this caller says, I had influenza, as I kind of see what the caller is getting at. I had influenza as a young woman. It was dreadful. Splitting headache, vomiting, very high fever, delirium, muscle pains over my whole body. No wonder it can be dangerous or deadly to vulnerable ones. Influenza is nothing like what people commonly call the flu. Those who are in hospitals right now surely have influenza and not the flu. Would be interesting to know. A lot of people are walking around going, I have the flu. And if you have the flu, you're not walking around, I'd say.
So you've the old thing of if there's 20 quid on the floor and you have the flu, you won't want to bend over and pick it up, you know. But curiously, when you look at the humans, so we are, broadly speaking, we are natural systems, so we are all dissimilar. And we saw this with COVID, you know, COVID having had it, some of us had the experience of being bedridden for days on end. And on other occasions we had it and we didn't know we had it. And flu is similar, you know. So for people with influenza syndrome, where we say you have the flu, it's a sudden onset of a high fever, headache. There's often carriers or runny nose at the start of it, and widespread aches and pains, and often a dry cough associated. Mm. And that rapidly progressive viral illness looks and feels quite similar to COVID, but at the minute, COVID isn't really circulating. So if you get all of that, it's flu. You will, however, if you go studying, swabbing people and looking for it, find lots of more subclinical cases. And we're seeing a spectrum at the minute of people with the vague headache, the aches and pains, and quite a bit of gastro inflammation and sometimes diarrhea. And a lot of those are proving to be influenza subtypes. We've had patients here in the practice where we've swabbed out of more academic curiosity than anything else. I wonder, could it be a flu? This was early season. A bit of a dose. Doesn't look like influenza. Let's swab it and see. And sure enough, it was influenza type A. So it is a spectrum.
It's nasty.
It's a spectrum, and it can be nasty, and it isn't always nasty, but you're really playing the odds, and by getting vaccinated, you're greatly, greatly diminishing your chances of this severe influenza syndrome with the complications. Okay. These vaccines don't form an impenetrable barrier. It's like a raincoat. I put on the raincoat, I go outside, I will still get wet, but I won't get soaked. And then the vaccine's a bit like that. It doesn't keep you indoors. You're still out among the flu. You still will get exposed, but your chances of fallout are significantly, significantly lower.
Okay, I think I've kept you long enough. Austin, thanks very much for talking to me this morning. Really appreciate your time.
Not at all. Anyhow, take care.
Bye-bye.